you know, you're supposed to talk, start a talk with something, some kind of wise comment. And so I got ready for this, preparing my notes and this stuff, and I saw this connector up here laying. I thought, well, now, isn't that interesting? We now have Ethernet to the podium. And I thought, well, this is change. I mean, this didn't used to be. And would you say this is good or bad? Well, my first instinct would be, well, this is kind of good. I mean, you can plug a laptop into the internet right at the podium. I mean, you used to be able to do that. And yet, many of the changes in this industry that are troubling to many of us because they're expensive and it's threatening some areas is all part of that. So it's good and bad, it's a mix, and certainly what we're going to talk about today, enhanced television, data broadcasting, that whole conglomeration of stuff, is both exciting and a little bit scary. And what I hope by getting our arms around it, getting familiar with it, we can take advantage of the exciting parts of it. So what I'm going to do is spend, I hope, less than the 45 minutes allotted to talk about the ABCs of enhanced television, and then we'll immediately go into the panel, and I'll be asking them to react to what I just said and clarify some things that I made muddy and fill in some blanks that I didn't talk about at all. And then we'll also progress on to more what is the pure data broadcasting aspect feature of the digital television world. So, let me see. There's the title slide. Push this button. I'm instructed. The green light is on. I'm ready to go. All right. How did I get here? Why are we doing this thing on ABCs of enhanced television? This speech is part of a project, the Local Enhancement Collaborative of four public television stations, funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting Future Fund, and those stations are, and represented, they will stand in the room, from KCSM in San Mateo, Chris Phillips. Chris is here somewhere, right here. From Twin Cities Public Television, that's me. From Milwaukee Public Television, David Felland. And from WGBH in Boston, Tim Halley. Tim is back there in the back. So if you want to know more about this project, grab one of those folks anytime. And we also have been very thrilled to be working very closely in this project with the great folks at PBS, primarily in the interactive area. Well, what was our mission in the LEC? The first thing we found out that was going to be a challenge just to define what that term means. And we haven't finished that process. We wanted to identify enhanced television developments that would have guaranteed certain roles for you, for stations, or even potential roles. A lot of the developments in enhanced television are national level. We wanted to focus on station needs. And then we wanted to develop practical steps for station involvement. You know that, especially for local programs where you don't have the budgets a national program has, that often means finding ways to make it possible to do it quickly and cheaply. We also wanted to find ways to localize enhancements to national shows that have enhancements added to them. And this may not seem like a big deal, but it turns out it can be difficult to figure out a practical way just to get the national enhancements through the individual local station. It's not easy. It's not obvious. And when we get all done, we want to tell the world what we've learned. And that's why I'm going to now encourage you, when you get home, to look at this website. Recognize that it's the first edition. The glossary is in pretty good shape. There's a system reference section, which I'll be kind of covering here, that is also in pretty good shape. The recipes, those practical steps for how to do this, we've gotten a good start, but we aren't by any means done. And look in June again, if you don't look in the meantime, when the project should be complete. So today I want to talk about this ETV term. I'm going to talk about the ATFEF spec as a specific example of enhanced television and kind of how you would go about doing ATFEF in some ways, and hope that that is helpful in understanding this. So first of all, what exactly is enhanced television? Well, in the beginning, there was television, and some of you may remember TVs that looked like this. You know, don't sit too close. Remember that? Then we enhanced television. We have made better pictures over the years. We added multi-channel sound. We added closed captioning, which works great for the hearing impaired and works good for sports bars. And then we added lots of channels first through cable, then more recently through DBS, and certainly made it interactive in an important way when the remote control became viable. Well, this is now something that we all and the public thinks of as normal television. And you remember when the telephone industry started revolutionizing to do more than just phone calls, and the way to describe the old system was the plain old television system or plain old television set. Well, I'm going to say we could call this the plain old television system, or POT for short. And we'll call everything else in the LEC, we're saying, well, we kind of give up. It's so hard to pin down what enhanced television is. Anything beyond what you can do with a TV and a remote control, we're going to call enhanced television, a very broad definition. Now anything can go on the website. And you may ask, why is this happening now? There's been a lot of trials of what you heard of interactive television in the past, in Ohio and in Florida. And some people said, well, they were failures. And so now when people say, well, it's really going to happen, there's a lot of skepticism and it's not moving as fast as people think. But there are some compelling reasons to believe that it really is going to happen. And one thing I like to think about is our collective human appetite for media. And there is this collective appetite for just listening to things in the sound space. And there is the appetite for watching visual experiences in the video space. And I created this thing called the data space for just other kinds of data. And for many years, we've had the phone and radio and movies and television and computer that existed for many years pretty much in isolation. But then over the years, we've had cable and satellite and the PC and the VCR and the Pong game and the internet starts to develop. And now in more recent years, we get DBS and broadband and digital cable and web TV and PVRs and education, enhanced cable and PlayStation 2 and DTV and web TV and enhanced TV and video on demand. And this whole thing starts to merge. And what you really see is the technologies and the content that are enabling on both ends of this space to start to kind of merge together. And if you follow the lines, and this website will be, PowerPoint I'm sure will be available later, you can kind of see how I'm thinking that these different things led to other things that are kind of merging into this combined thing we're going to call enhanced television. Well, the evidence of this is seeing the kind of merger and investment mania that happened in the last 10 years when, you know, at first glance, when I heard AOL's buying Time Warner, I don't get it. Well, after thinking about it and being aware of this world, I'm starting to get it. It's all about this new enhanced media world. And a lot of these organizations recognize that their profit in this media marketplace is tied to control of the technology, control of the content, and control of the value to the user in the form, ultimately, of advertising. The compelling forces in this world are in captivating audiences, reducing the amount of surf between channels, getting the audience glued to the programming and the commercials, and carrying the audience through commercials in some cases. There's commerce applications, you know, selling pizzas and the clothes the soap opera star is wearing. And certainly in public television, we're most interested in this third possibility to cultivate the audience through enhanced content that is more educational and more meaningful. Well, in looking at how all this works, I'm a systems guy. That's how I describe myself ultimately as an engineer. So I always try to figure out, well, how does this work and what pieces are there? And if I hook this piece, what can it do? And before I dive into that, let me just say how I've kind of categorized, and we've categorized at the LEC, the different types of enhanced television in the very broad sense of the term. There's technologies that are all about new ways of controlling the content, the convenience of controlling the content, and giving you more choice. And we're calling these appetizers, because this is a cookbook after all. And so there's the electronic program guide, or do you want to call it the interactive program guide, and you see this in DBS and cable and now in DTV. There's the personal video recorder, and we're off to a start on that. And there's a lot of interest. It hasn't taken off as far as they like. There's some controversy, but you're going to see PVR capability become very popular. Continuing interest in video on demand for cable and broadband areas. And we're certainly going to see the ability to trade video files a la MP3. And so you have interest in things like Vivix, and that's not the Circuit City DVD format. Another category is putting new kinds of web content on the television. We're calling this in the category of TV dinners. And so you see ways of putting TV HTML content on set-top boxes, on the cable and DBS area. And there's new kinds of web content that really is tied to the timeline of the TV show. You see this in some deployments by ABC, where they have a PC next to a television, and they're just feeding it, pushing it on the internet. And there are new deployments of TV synchronous enhancements. And again, we put this in the TV dinner category. So we'll get back to this, but let's talk about this system. Now, in building a system, in the old days, we had providers, broadcasters, networks providing content, and we had users and their televisions at home. And connecting these two was really, even though we thought it was complicated as broadcasters, from a system standpoint, relatively simple. You had stations involved, and you had this RF transport, the NTSC transport system. And once you connected those with arrows, pretty much very simple, everything was interoperable. It was all NTSC. You could plug everything together with a BNC connector. It all works. It's just pictures, and then there is some kind of 3-pin connector for sound. So that deployment of stations over the transport was a pretty straightforward system. Well, cable came along, stations became optional, head ends became mandatory, but stations were also often involved. And over the years, set-top boxes became mandatory for access to some of the content. Again, still relatively straightforward. With enhanced television, it becomes much more complex, much more interrelated, in that you often have platforms, which is some combination of hardware and an operating system in a set-top box, and middleware that is a layer of software that rides on top of that operating system that makes it possible for different applications from different companies to all work on a variety of set-top boxes. And you have these application services that recognize that not everybody wants to invest in what it costs to develop a game application, and so I'm going to be a company just doing games, and then I'll get contracts with various networks to do games on certain middleware that operate on various platforms. This is a new world. But all of these are designed for digital transports, and we need to be watching what deployments where organizations take certain platforms with certain capabilities and certain middleware and then package content with certain application services and roll this out as something they sell to the public. We are certainly influenced in what we can do in public television by what's available in this regard. And the systems area of the ETV cookbook uses this very same diagram, and you can explore various middleware that's available, different platforms, different kinds of transport. And we hope that's helpful to you. But let's start in the platform area, because what's available in hardware has some fundamental limits to what we can do in terms of content and what we can do in terms of middleware. And there are two important platforms to consider. There's the television with the enhanced set-top box. And certainly most people think this is going to be the most important platform to be concerned about in this new marketplace. We have some deployments where we're using PCs with televisions or just PCs on their own, and ABC will say that's because they're getting ready for the enhanced set-top box world, and so they want to get started with something they can do today because they can push content to PCs where there aren't enough areas of deployment available with set-top boxes. So I'm calling this the couch experience, is where you sit back watching a television display. The chair experience is when you're sitting close to the PC, and there are some fundamental differences to the content you would want to author for those two environments. Now, in the future, We may also be concerned with mobile media devices that can actually do moving pictures and where there'd be enhanced content with those as well. But hey, that's too much to work on. We aren't going to worry about that too much right now. So let's just review some of the kinds of enhancements that have been available for the two-screen environment for the chair experience. You can have a regular TV with a PC and an internet connection. It's doable today. You get a lot of type on the screen, lots of rows of characters because you're sitting close to a high-resolution display. However, most of them can't overlay these enhancements on the moving video image because it's on this separate television. And you've got to have the PC next to the television set. But a great example of this is what ABC's done with Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and Monday Night Football. But I'm not sure if they dropped one of these. Already referring to my panel. I went to their website and it wasn't clear that they were going to continue, and I can't remember which one. But go take a look, see what you find. Another kind of enhancement is where it could all occur on the PC, where you could have the moving image on the PC with a PC tuner card. Now, there are some ATFIF tuner cards available. We'll hear from Wave Express later about this. HopHog has ATFIF software available for their card. And there are streaming formats that have enhanced TV type features, and WGBH has done some interesting work, and you can use the QuickTime viewer and go to their site and look at it. And Windows Media Player has some features in this regard as well. Then there are the TV enhancements, where we cultivate the television experience. But there's some big differences here. These displays have limits. People are sitting far away, like 12 feet usually. The screen is, you know, varying sizes. You can't count on it being huge. And then there's overscan. This limits to a huge extent how much content you can put in that screen. The control is now a remote with up, down, left, right buttons, not a mouse. So you have to simplify the navigation. You probably don't want to use scrolling. It's a very different environment. But a great example of this is what's been done with Web TV Plus. There's about 500,000 of those boxes out. And there's a lot of other platforms coming that will be doing this. There's a lot of interest in this area. Some examples of this has been what's been done with Jeopardy on the Web TV platform. The NewsHour has content regularly available that you can look at. And I guess I didn't have it here, but maybe we'll put on the website. You can actually go in with your web browser, even if you don't have a web TV box, and look at the kind of content they're feeding. It just doesn't have the video picture in it. And more recently, ATFIF content we've been involved in is what's been done with PBS and Triveni Digital and Wave Express, the Scientific American Frontiers, where ATFIF content has been added to a PBS program. Okay, well, let's talk about what kind of standards are available for doing this kind of work. Before we get into that, there's a little SMPTE tutorial here in some of the new lingo you may have heard. In the old days when we just had video and audio and then we added closed captions and then second audio program, and now we're adding enhancements, all of these things that you experience as a user, SMPTE is calling, getting out of order here. There's this other aspect of things in the pink that describe that content. It's information about that content necessary for you to view it to make it easy to navigate. Things like what picture format is it, what language is the audio, what language is the SAP program, what standards are used for the enhancements. What SMPTE says is the things you experience are the essence. The information about that essence is called metadata. And the whole package is content, right? This is important for a reason which will become apparent in a minute. In the world of enhanced television standards, for the narrow world of enhanced television where we're adding this interesting content along with the television show, there are two approaches that have been debated a lot, and there are different stages of development. One is described as being, I shouldn't use that word, one is termed procedural, where we would have the ability in the set-top box to do some very sophisticated things with actual Java code, where we could download a whole new application to the set-top box and have it become a new device. This is what's fairly far along in Europe in the DVB MHP multimedia home platform standard, and it's nearing a state of standards completion in the U.S. under ATSC DAZE committee, which Michael can cover a little bit more later. The cable industry, I'm hoping I get some wisdom here. I keep hearing that they're looking at something for their standardization, perhaps on this same order. But to author this content in its fullest form, you might have to make a significant investment because you need somebody, a good Java staff that knows how to write Java code. This is not JavaScript. This is Java, the language. This could be expensive. The alternative approach that is available today is called declarative, where instead of writing procedures and actual computer programs to create the user experience, we're relying on existing HTML standards with JavaScript ability for, you know, some relatively sophisticated scripting to control the experience. And this is what is being differentiated from DAZE under SMPTE's working effort to standardize the ATFEF specification into what is, in a not very exciting marketing way, being called the Declarative Data Essence Standard. Okay? I can't imagine that being marketed, and it probably won't need to be. And so the differentiation is here is this is declarative data essence, the enhancement content, as opposed to the procedural data essence that DAZE provides. And it has the advantage of being available in hardware today because it's easier to do. There's no licensing with Sun for Java. And you can take the advantage of all your folks who know how to do HTML. And the smaller number, but significant number, who can do JavaScripting. And this comparison is an eye test. Most people promise not to give you one. Here is a one that would test anyone. But it's in some of the work of SMPTE trying to compare the features available in the two approaches. And the four approaches when they add cable and the DVB. And there's a lot of similarities between DAZE and MHP and big differences between those approaches and SMPTE's standardization of ATFEF DDE. But it's very helpful to talk about ATFEF because you can do it today and a lot of the concepts apply in the DAZE world. So what I'm going to do is talk about a little ATFEF tutorial, and then we're going to look at some applications. But recognize there's a lot of support for ATFEF. Some big companies here, including the Public Broadcasting Service. The platforms available today, the Web TV Plus, as I mentioned before, AOL TV is saying they'll be able to do ATFEF. There are digital cable systems talking. I haven't got definitive word. And there's word that there will be televisions that will have some of these features built in. And when you see things about Transport B up here, you'll get that in just a minute. So let's do a little ATFEF tutorial. We'll talk about the specifications for what you can put in the content, how you get it there, and bindings. How do you hook all this stuff together with various networks, within various networks? So let's talk about the content specification. ATFEF says that you can use HTML 4.0, cascading style sheets level 1, and I think it's a joke to say ECMAScript plus DOM 0 equals JavaScript 1.1. Isn't that true? Did I get that right?
Sounds great.
Okay. So this is some important definitions for the content. The type of media, you can have text, you can have PNG files, JPEGs, but no Flash. And a lot of authors say, oh, shucks. Integrating with TV, there's some minor modifications to HTML where now you have a URL that has TV colon, and you just treat that like an image. Now you can position the TV picture anywhere within the web page at any size. and there's some ability to even tune what channel it's on. There is a trigger receiver object to define how to accept commands that say, okay, do this now, because at this moment in the show, we want this thing to appear on the screen. And there's the actual triggers where it says, go to this URL, and in some cases, do this script, do this JavaScript. And there is a scheme of identifying the content that can say, look in the memory of the set-top box before you go out on the internet for this content, because we may have already sent it as part of the data broadcast. And as a little precursor, that's transport B. And there is a requirement that the set-top box include a whopping 1 megabyte of cache so that you can send data ahead of time and have it available at the click of the button. But the specification is for just 1 megabyte. Okay, now the interesting stuff for a systems guy. Two ways to get the content there in ATFIF. The first is called transport A, and that's where you just tell the box, here's the URL for the data, go off on the internet and get it. And the web TV box, if it isn't already connected, dials the phone, connects the modem, goes off to the web server, gets the content, and then displays it. And that can take some time. And I finally remembered these two by remembering transport B for broadcast. Transport B says, well, let's consider the option. Instead of having the box have to go out on the internet, let's send the data with the television picture, dump it in the cache, so now it's there available instantly. And the standard also allows you within your content to use both transport A and transport B, so you would send to the cache the content that you know just about everybody's going to use, but then let them go off on the internet for things that they aren't, you know, a small number are going to want to get, or to give them more options. The bindings say that with an NTSC, if you're going to do transport A, you put these triggers to say, go get this now. There's a specified way to do that. You put it in text channel 2. And if you watch these programs that have ATFIF content and you tune your closed caption channel on your television set, you can see this stuff go by. Now, most of it doesn't have any carriage returns, so it kind of goes zoop off the screen, but it's there. Transport B within NTSC says we would do it via the IP protocol over the vertical blanking interval, which isn't a terribly fast approach, but it does have the advantage of broadcasting it. And I don't know of anybody doing that today. There's also bindings for IP where these announcements tell the receiver how to find the programming and where it's available. So let's give you some examples of executing ATFIF. How do we author it, and how do we get it to the user? How do we get it there? Now, with legacy NTSC, we authored content. We usually put it on tape in the old days. Now, lots of times, we're putting it on servers, so we can store it either way. Then we've got lots of different ways we can transport it compatibly, over satellite or broadcast over cable, and it gets to the television set and receives it. No sweat. Well, ATFIF A counts on the fact or recognizes the fact that those huge systems are hard to modify. And they took advantage of the ability to put these triggers within the closed caption channel, because you and I know that's very robust. It makes it through a VCR running in the low speed mode. So we can put these triggers in the closed caption channel and then let the box go off on the internet, the red lines, to get the content from the server. Well, there's three problems with this approach. The first is speed. And this can be critical for these enhancements you want to occur at specific points in the show. It could be either because the person has a slow connection or because the internet's bogged down. Another is scalability. If this takes off and we get millions of people watching the program and they're all clicking the enhancement at the same time, the server goes croak. The other is reach. There's areas where it's hard to get the TV or the ETV device connected to the internet. Or maybe somebody's got a modem line, but, you know, my sister's on it and she's surfing the internet and now I can't do my enhancements. The phone line's occupied. or there's no separate phone line. Now you got to tie up the phone line that's already tied up too much with the modem for everybody watching television. These are problems. So it was recognized that there would be these advantages of getting everything through the broadcast, Transport B, where you send the triggers and the essence through the broadcast. And recognizing that there'd be some cases where you'd want to allow people to do both. The advantages of Transport B is speed. It could be as fast as a DTV channel, perhaps 100 times faster as a modem connection. Because you can send the content ahead of time, get it in the cache, and so when somebody clicks on it, it's there, the speed can seem infinite. There is advantage of scalability. You can go to unlimited numbers of users. The server doesn't care. It's just sending the data once. And reach is great because you don't need an internet connection at all. Sounds good, huh? And broadcasters think, wow, a role for DTV. Another good thing to help sell this new service. Well, there are some problems. Offline authoring, in a world where you're creating content ahead of time, now you've got to figure out when to send the content. That's something authors didn't have to worry about with Transport A. And you have to send it, be sure to be sending it before somebody's going to click on it. You got to know how much bandwidth you have available so that you know how long it's going to take to get there. And so now you've got to know how much bandwidth is available through all these networks. And you're going to have agreements between networks and stations and authors so they know how much content they can put in that channel. For a live authoring situation, where you want to be doing it for a live show, now you don't know when you're going to need the event, so you might have difficulty sending the essence ahead of time. And the data might arrive late unless you've got enough bandwidth, and maybe you will. And there are some techniques to anticipate these clicks by kind of knowing what content you're going to need eventually and sending it ahead of time. But as I see it, the biggest problem with Transport B is the unique systems that exist throughout the state. Just within PBS alone, all of our stations are different. How do we get this Transport B content through the station? It can appear like a brick wall. And then how do we get it out to users as well? Many of whom are on cable. Now, the simplest approach to get Transport B through a station is bypass. We've all done that. All of us who put our DTV station on the air, I think, have done this, where we didn't want to buy an encoder right away. We could just take that spigot right out of the demodulator and plug it right into our DTV transmitter. This approach also works great for Transport B over DTV. No problem. But I haven't talked to anybody yet who wants this to be a solution for a long time. We want to be able to brand, and in fact, legally, we have to be able to add EAS crawls to our local station. We don't want to just plug it across. We've got to have customization of our data stream. It's a great solution for getting started, for trying some things out. It's not a good long-term solution. The other two approaches, which are both, I think, viable in the long term, only one of which we can do today, I'm terming station synchronization and producer synchronization. And the first installs equipment at your station that inserts this essence, this enhanced data essence, at the time of broadcast, along with the video and the audio, into your DTV encoder and multiplexer. So the red lines are new, the blue lines are old. You always had producers and networks. Many of us have automation systems. Not everyone does. And we all have master control. Well, we would need this separate server holding this data, ready to transmit it, synchronized with the broadcast of that content. This is what was done for those of us involved in the Scientific American trials, where we were inserting local content for that program. We all had equipment from Triveni and the muxing equipment necessary to insert this local data. But we can all tell you that, you know, thinking about this, if this is going to be like a regular thing, we all know it's got to be automated. Now you've got to get the content to that server ahead of time. You got to synchronize it with your automation system, so when the show actually starts, which isn't necessarily when it was in the log, is when the data is sent out. And it might need to be synchronized. I hear a little chuckling over here. And we synchronize this with the encoder because maybe we're telling it how much bandwidth to reserve for this content. These are lots of new, well, let me go on to my next slide. The advantages are you don't need to make any other modifications to your master control or to the video network. You just install this equipment at the station. Having this would allow stations to do local enhancements. This is all the gear you need to do your own ATRIF enhancements. You can make last-minute changes to the content by just updating the content on the central server before it's downloaded. And you can actually start feeding the content before the show begins, which in the commercial world might be necessary so that when the commercial starts, somebody can click on the enhancement right away. Disadvantages are, this is a complex system, and that always makes me a little nervous as a systems guy. And there are high costs to implementing this and getting it started, especially in these early days when we don't have a lot of viewers. And you can't just take that videotape, load it on a tape machine, and look at it and try out the enhancements. You got to have the server running with it to be able to try this stuff out. So the challenges are, you got to have standards for hooking all this stuff together so equipment from various vendors will be interoperable. And you need new automation systems added to existing systems, and for many of you who don't have automation systems, you'd have to get one. The other approach I'm calling producer synchronization, and you can't do this today, but I think it'd be kind of nice if we could because I think it would come in handy. And this suggests that for a lot of content where we don't need to add enhancements at the local station, and for many of us that don't want to necessarily go out right next year and buy an enhanced TV system when we haven't got enough money to finish our DTV facility, would it be nice to do like PBS was doing, add the data to the program in Braddock Place, but now stick it within the vertical interval of the digital data stream in the VANT space, the vertical ancillary space. There's a lot of room there. It turns out, took a little digging, but DVC Pro, Betacam SX, IMX, all those formats, and a whole pile of servers can store a complete line of uncompressed data in the vertical interval. We aren't using that today. It's just empty real estate. That's like 300 kilobits per second available. If we had a box from an Evertz or a NORPAC that would allow us to stick this enhancement data in the vertical ancillary space, and if we made sure our satellite system was set up to be able to accept that data, and if we knew that our gear at the station could just pass it through the tape machines and the server, now we could record the enhancements right along with the video and audio in a regular old videotape or a regular old server. I think that could be handy. The advantages of this approach: lower implementation cost to the stations, simpler to operate, you could take a tape and browse it. Disadvantages are the data rate would be limited to 300 kilobits, and maybe that's not a problem. My other joke is maybe that's a good limit to give the producers. The challenges are we need a recommended practice, at least within our own system, about how we are going to use the VANT space. We would, you would need an SDI plant, and a lot of people have, we're just getting around to that in St. Paul, and we know the challenges of that. But you need an SDI system in your master control to let this VANT data pass. And there's not even any equipment today to try this out. Which approach should be used? Do I think? I think the synchronization at the producer is a great way to start if we had a way to do it, and especially handy for smaller stations and for all of us when we didn't want to have to rely on the data server. But doing it at the station is something you're going to want to do eventually for local enhancements and perhaps even for national enhancements later. So my conclusion is there's a lot of work to do in this field. I think it'll be fun. A lot of trying out lots of new recipes. It's a work in progress. Please recognize that when you go to the ETV cookbook, kind of go to the right-hand side of the menu structure of the website first. That's what's furthest along. And please take advantage of what's on every page. There's a little thing at the bottom that says, please comment. And tell us anything that's confusing, misleading, incomplete, and that will help us make this a better website for you. After all, that's why we did it.